Today, how a luxury ski resort became the centre of Europe's COVID outbreak. I mean, what was the sell? What's the appeal of going to Ischgl?
Well, it was firstly that it's a really good ski area by all accounts. The Alps are just an incredible place, and going out with a good bunch of lads and having a few drinks was appealing. You know, expected it to be full of sort of 40 to 50 year old blokes sort of going out and being children for a few days. actually, that was pretty much what I saw when I arrived.
This is Nigel Malander from Hampshire. Back in March, he was looking forward to hitting the Austrian slopes for a boozy break with his mates in the resort of Ischgl. Were you thinking about coronavirus before you went?
Of course. I actually double-checked the Foreign Office advice on travel before going. At that point in time, the Italian situation was brewing and starting to go in an exponential way. But I took the view that since there was no apparent news or warnings about travelling to Austria, that it would be a relatively safe bet. How wrong I was.
What happened to Nigel and thousands of others in Ischgl have led to them bringing a class action lawsuit against the Austrian government. From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, was a ski resort Europe's COVID ground zero? Philip, tell me about Ischgl. What do visitors expect when they go there?
Ischgl is a very popular ski resort for many reasons. One is that the snow is reliably powdery there all the way from November through to May.
Philip Alterman is The Guardian's Berlin bureau chief.
It's very compact. You don't need a car to get around. There are 45 state-of-the-art ski lifts, three of which take you directly from the edge of town up to the mountain. And then one of the other features that make Ischgl the sort of place it is are the après-ski bars, which are, I think, why a lot of people go there. They are sort of wooden huts where you can get beer and rounds of Jägermeister shots, and there's very loud music. Europop, Schlager, as they call it there, people sometimes form a conga and sometimes even leave one bar and go along to the next.
Depending on how many Jaeger shots you've had, presumably.
Exactly, yeah.
So it's got a real reputation, has it, for being a party resort?
I mean, some people call it the Ibiza on ice. I think it's worth saying it's not necessarily a trashy sort of place, because it's also quite a luxury tourist destination. There's some bars that only serve champagne. So it's the sort of place where you need to have a bit of cash in your pockets to go on holiday there.
When did the news that the virus might be spreading in the Tyrol region emerge?
The moment that Ischgl should have realised that something was up, and the moment at which perhaps the authorities should have started to act, was the 4th of March. At 11:45, one of the hotels in the city received an email from an Icelandic tourist, a woman who'd been on a skiing trip to Ischgl the week before. And she told the hotel management that she had been tested positive for COVID-19. This woman had been part of a group of skiers who, a lot of them were doctors, so they'd all been quite aware of the virus and the symptoms and the risks. So as well as informing this individual hotel, shortly before midnight, Iceland's top health authority also sent a message to its counterpart in Vienna to tell them they thought that it was possible, if not likely, that this person had caught the virus in Ischgl. The next morning, Iceland officially declared Ischgl a high-risk destination. So it was in the same category at that point as Wuhan and Iran.
So Iceland were taking this very seriously. But what about the authorities responsible for the region in Tyrol?
For reasons that we do not entirely know. Authorities in the Tyrol region ended up deciding on the 5th of March that this wasn't a big threat. The state's medical director that afternoon put out a statement in which he said it was very probable that the Icelandic tourists who had caught the virus had done so on the plane from Munich to Reykjavik and not in Ischgl. This was based on a sort of half sentence, really, in that email that was sent to the hotel. The Icelandic tourist said that she had heard, that had been informed by the airline, that there was one tourist from Italy on the plane who was also positive with COVID-19. So on Saturday, the 7th of March, Saturdays are the turnover day, staffs at the hotels, they changed the bedding, cleaned the rooms, and checked in another group of guests for another week. A barkeeper at a bar called Kitzloch, which is the same bar where a couple of Icelandic tourists had spent a bit of time on their trip, tested positive, becoming the first confirmed case of COVID-19 in Ischgl itself. But on the Sunday, the health authorities still insisted that they thought it was unlikely from a medical perspective that the virus could have been transferred from the staff at the bar to tourists. That theory didn't survive for very long because by the Monday, the 9th of March, it was confirmed that 15 people who had been in contact with that barkeeper had also tested positive.
Okay, so now the virus is in the resort and in the places where everyone gathers, which is the bars. Did authorities in Tyrol now start reacting differently?
We know from text messages that were later leaked to an Austrian blog that just minutes after breaking news appeared in Austria that it wasn't just one isolated case, the owner of the bar where that barman had worked received a text message from a very senior authority in the Tyrol region, from the deputy head of the Chamber of Commerce there, who's also a spokesman for the cable car operators, and a member of Austria's governing party, the Austrian People's Party. The text message said, please shut down your Kitz bar as soon as possible, or you will be to blame for the end of the season in Ischgl and possibly Tyrol. The entire country is watching your bar, he sent in a second text message sent a couple of minutes later.
And did the bar shut?
Kitzloch Bar did shut its doors by 6 p.m. And really, you would have expected that the other bars in the area also shut their doors. That wasn't the case. We know from videos taken on mobile phones, but also I know from talking to people who were there, that while there was an order to close the Apres-Ski ski bars on Tuesday the 10th of March, it wasn't yet policed.
Nigel, you arrived in Ischgl on Tuesday the 10th of March. What did you do first? Where did you go?
I went up, checked into the hotel, very, very nice little hotel, and said that I would meet Bill down in this bar at, you know, 4 o'clock, 4:30, something like that.
So that evening, you know, when you first got there, there was no sense at all that people were worried about the virus?
No, not at all. I mean, I tipped up at the bar. The place was, you know, busy, as per any ski resort, sort of just as the lifts are closing, you know, people coming down.
So you didn't know that they'd asked other bars to close. You know, all felt quite safe.
Yeah, I had no idea that that actually the bar that I went to wasn't even supposed to be open.
Clearly, the virus was spreading. Why didn't they decide to close down more of the resort at this point, do you think?
It's worth remembering this was at an early stage when we didn't know that much about how the virus spread. And in other parts in those days, they did just shut down venues rather than all the bars in a city or a country at that point. We can speculate that maybe there were other reasons why authorities wanted to keep the resort as open for as long as possible. The cable cars in particular are really key to not just to Ischgl, but the entire region. We know that every third euro earned in the Tyrol comes directly or indirectly from tourism, mainly from visitors from Germany, Italy. who spend around 8.4 billion euros there every year.
So Nigel arrives 6 days after Iceland raised the alarm about potential COVID cases in the resort, but most of the bars are still open. What happened next?
The next day, police began to enforce the ban on the après-ski bars. But the social life and the nightlife in Ischgl didn't come to a complete standstill either. We know that restaurants stayed open, some hotel bars stayed open on the Wednesday and Thursdays, and the ski lifts continued to carry people up the mountain.
At what point, then, did the resort actually realise it had to close down completely?
So it all came to an end at 2 p.m. on Friday, the 13th of March, when the Austrian Chancellor, Sebastian Kurz, held a press conference in Vienna.
Es werden daher das Paznauntal und St. Anton am Adelberg unter Quarantäne gestellt.
And he announced that the entire Paznaun Valley, which is where Ischgl is based, would be quarantined with immediate effect. And tourists were advised to leave the valley speedily.
I got a phone call from the young lady at the hotel. And she said, Mr. Melander, I'm afraid you're going to have to get back here as quickly as possible and leave. At this point, there were Austrian police cars appearing on the road, masked up policemen, basically checkpoints on the road.
For Nigel, this is when events began to play out like a bad disaster movie. Thousands of panicking tourists were rushing to leave the valley at the same time. Roads became blocked and taxis were full. He got back to his hotel as fast as he could, packed his bag and made for a bus stop.
The bus arrived, and by that time there were probably another 10 or 12 people who'd arrived with all their suitcases. So we all piled onto the bus.
So you're pretty crammed on.
It wasn't at that point in time, but it became more so as we got down into Ischgl. By this time we were almost in standing traffic. It was moving at a snail's pace. It was just one long tailback of traffic.
How long was that journey?
For me, it was 8.5 hours.
And how long should it have taken?
About 40 minutes.
Did it ever cross your mind that someone on the bus could be infected?
Yes, it did, but we had no option.
If Ischgl wasn't already a pretty ideal environment for COVID-19, it certainly was on the afternoon of Friday the 13th, when people were locked into enclosed spaces trying to get out of the valley.
Knowing what we know now about how easily this virus spreads, I'm just sort of imagining all these tourists cramming on buses and heading all over the world. Do we know where they were returning to?
Just to sort of give a picture of where all these people were going, people from at least 47 countries were in Ischgl over that period. Almost every country in Europe, particularly Northern Europe, particularly Germany, Denmark and the Netherlands, but also from Cambodia, from Zimbabwe, and a lot of people were there from Britain.
Nigel, when did you realise you were ill?
I think it was probably on the bus, actually. But I wasn't sure whether it was a sort of culmination of the fact that, you know, we'd been having a few beers and skiing and, you know, being tired, etc. But I didn't feel 100%. I can't say that I felt ill. I wasn't coughing or had any other major symptoms. I just felt a little bit under the weather.
When did that change? When did your symptoms change?
We had managed to book a hotel in Landeck, and we trogged off to bed, and I had sort of mild sweats, thought, yeah, actually this is probably just a little bit more than just being a little bit tired and stressed. I felt that, you know, possibly I'd been infected with it.
When you landed in the UK, what, you know, did anyone ask you any questions or check you?
No. There was no screening or anything of that sort. And that was, when was that? That was the 15th of March.
You'd had a very difficult journey home and you finally get back to your family, but you have to self-isolate. How did you feel in the days that followed?
I'd actually likened this insidious, nasty disease to a cat that catches a mouse. It sort of announces its presence. It gets a hold of you, and then it lets go of you just to make you think that actually you're getting better. And that happened repeatedly. By the time we got to the week of the 27th, it became difficult for me to breathe. My wife's a nurse. Michelle came into the room. She sat at the bottom of the bed and she said, "Are you all right?" And I probably could get 3 or 4 words out before I had to stop and draw breath. I said, "I'm okay." And she looked at me sideways and said, "I don't think you are. I'm going to take this one out of your hands." And the paramedics arrived and down into the ambulance. Then that was a fairly major moment. I recall that with a reasonable amount of emotion, because I was walking out of my house and I wasn't actually 100% sure whether I would be coming back on my feet or in a box.
After this, why Nigel has joined a lawsuit against the Austrian government. Philip, do we have any idea now how many people got coronavirus during their time at the resort?
We don't have any official numbers from the Austrian state or the Tyrol region on how many people caught COVID-19 in Ischgl. What we do have is a lawsuit that has been put together by lawyers in Austria. They've collected signatures from more than 6,000 tourists from 47 countries around the world. We know that at least 28 people who visited Ischgl in late February and early March later died of COVID-19.
So 6,000 people are part of this lawsuit. How are they going about bringing the complaint?
So this class action lawsuit is being pulled together by Austria's Federal Economic and Anti-Corruption Office, and particular a lawyer there who is called Peter Kolber. And he has put together a complaint in which he urges the state prosecutor to examine why venues like the après-ski bars, why they're shut down so late, and the role they played in allowing the virus to spread. His criminal complaint names 21 bar owners and local officials as potential suspects. But ultimately, that complaint puts the blame at the doors of the Austrian government and what it calls the calculated export of the virus. They are planning to launch a test case later this month to see how the courts react, whether they find that the Austrian government could be liable for what could be millions of euros in settlement compensation.
The Austrian Chancellor, Sebastian Kurz, does not think there was a delayed response. When asked by a German talk show host if he or the authorities in Tyrol were to blame, he said, "If what happened was that something was covered up, then of course it will be punished in Austria, just as it would be in Germany. If the question is, did we act in time, then I can only say about us that we acted significantly faster than most other European countries. We had a lockdown before Germany did." But for Nigel, who is one of the tourists bringing the complaint, it is important to understand what went wrong in Ischgl.
I would want to give the benefit of the doubt, given that we are in an extraordinary time, we're in an extraordinary situation with this virus. However, if considerations such as, you know, financial viability or making money, if those considerations came first and health and well-being and safety came second, then that needs to be called out.
And you think that's what happened here?
Having read more about the time leading up to it and what happened in Ischgl, found out after the fact about the Icelandic situation. And you know, had I known that the Icelandic government had told their citizens not to go to the Pasnaun Valley because of this thing, I think I probably would have seriously reconsidered whether I'd visited there. You know, let's not forget. I mean, I'm one of the lucky ones. People have died because of this. You know, some people didn't get to see their loved ones again.
The ski season is due to start back up again soon. So what's going to happen in Ishkul now?
Ishkul is fairly hopeful that things will be back to normal. And to be fair, I've spoken to a lot of tourists who say, the skiing there is so good, the snow is so powdery, I'm going to go back, whatever happens. Nonetheless, I think even the authorities are, you know, they're aware that they have a problem. Ishkul has become a byword for mishandling of the pandemic really across Europe. So they have a bit of a reputation problem. And as far as I can see, they're trying to rectify that really by becoming a slightly more high-end sort of destination. And they say they're going to maybe close down the après-ski bars a bit earlier.
So this has affected Ishkul's reputation. It's been described as the ground zero for Europe's COVID outbreak. But is this fair?
Ishkul has been called the COVID ground zero of Europe, though that would slightly imply that the virus actually had come out of Ishkul. That's clearly not the case. We don't know how the virus actually got to Ishkul. But I think what's undeniably true is that Ishkul turned out to be a key accelerator of the virus at that stage of the pandemic, because it managed to very efficiently catapult this virus all across Europe in a very short amount of time.
That was Philip Alterman and Nigel Molander. Read the full story of what happened in Ishkul at theguardian.com. Today's episode was produced by Elizabeth Cassin and sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.